Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Midwest Hemp Council Weekly Podcast. After a brief hiatus, we are back on the air, ready to go, and we will be here through the rest of the year. This broadcast is brought to you by the Bose Public Affairs Group at Bose, McKinney & Evans. I'm your host, Jason Dozier. Thanks so much for joining us this week, and let's get started. On today's program, we'll hear from Michael Bowman, Chief Policy Officer for First Crop Incorporated, a public benefit corporation dedicated to helping American farmers involved in the hemp industry. We'll also hear from Eric Steenstra, president of Vote Hemp, a political advocacy organization Eric co-founded back in 2000. But first, we turn our attention to Justin Swanson, Midwest Hemp Council president and vice president of Bose Public Affairs Group of Council at Bose, McKinney & Evans. Justin, it's been a while. How you doing today?
I'm great, Jason. It's good to be back. It's been a while.
It has been. But it's great that we're back on track and have things rolling along. And we were just discussing, hopefully things went well with you and the family during this period and this time of strangeness and craziness during 2020.
Yeah, it's obviously challenging times for everybody for a variety of reasons. And, you know, we don't have family around. So we were both working full time and trying to take care of two kids. And we just got them back in daycare. So that's been quite a bit of relief for both of us.
we all go through those stages, and like I said, it's great to be able to spend that time with family, but sometimes family just needs to see other people and not me, you know?
Absolutely.
So, well, let's get into it then, Justin. Now, of course, things have not been quiet on the hemp front. Let's jump into the update on the smokable hemp that did become illegal on August 13th. That was quite a blow to everybody around here. Tell us, go ahead and set that up for us. Tell us what happened and why that happened.
So just to, I'll just do a quick 10,000 foot overview for the benefit of people who may not have been keeping up with this issue, but this has really been, almost a year and a half court case being litigated in federal court. The plaintiffs were successful in the U.S. District Court to get an injunction from to prohibit the state from enforcing Indiana's ban on smokable hemp. And we were awarded that in September of 2019. The state appealed that decision to the Seventh Circuit. We had oral arguments over the phone in April, I believe. And then we just had a decision issued, sometime in July, maybe. That was a mixed bag for the plaintiffs. The good news was it affirmed, our stance that individual states do not have the authority to interfere with the interstate transportation of hemp and hemp products. Mm-hmm. So that's good. And they actually even went as far, to throw shade on, the supposed fix from the 2020 session, that allowed the products to move through Indiana so long as it doesn't stop in Indiana and be sold in Indiana.
Sure.
So that was a positive sign. Obviously, that the downside was the Seventh Circuit agreed with the state that states do have the authority to ban individual hemp products from their jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Did it give a reason why they're doing that?
So it is a little it's a little frustrating when you the plaintiffs had the same arguments from day one, which is states don't have the authority to change the definition of hemp. The federal government stepped in, defined it, and actually expanded the definition based on the 2014 and 2018 definition of hemp. Mm-hmm. They didn't address our argument at all. They just kind of took the state's argument that they have the power to do this through their state police powers and remanded it back down to the district court. So that's really was kind of the frustrating aspect. We didn't get a clear answer on whether our argument held any water or not. They just kind of ignored it.
So where do we go from here?
So it was remanded back down to the U.S. District Court, and we are in strategy discussions right now on next steps. So we're not sure on what the next steps are just yet.
All right. And again, there will be lawsuits, I assume.
We're not sure, Jason, on that, whether it's litigation or go to the state house in January.
Come on, Justin, you're an attorney. Yeah. Isn't that what you do? Don't you live for things like that?
You know, I mean, at the end of the day, it's always better to be working with people rather than trying to fight them. And we'd love to go to the state house and collect our allies and come up with some common sense, pragmatic solutions to law enforcement concerns on this product that is, you know, by a factual basis, the most lucrative product a farmer can make right now from the hemp crop. A group in Texas did challenge a similar ban on smokable hemp products through their regulations. And they actually were successful to get a temporary restraining order or injunction, I should say, that only lasts 14 days, but that's going to give the courts time to do a full on hearing. So it's a good positive first step there. The one difference in Texas versus Indiana that I can tell from a distance is Texas legislature did not specifically address smokable hemp, meaning they didn't ban it. Mm-hmm. And it was actually done through rules. And so I think they have a little a stronger argument to say, you know, a state agency overstepped their authority as opposed to the state doesn't have the authority to do this like we were trying to argue in Indiana. So hats off to the folks in Texas. I'm hearing that Kentucky has been looking at similar litigation. And I would just really encourage everyone to continue to talk to the lawmakers and stakeholders about the importance of this product, because it won't be the last time we think that certain products will be challenged that are coming from the hemp plant.
Well, and then this was a situation where it was illegal, then it was legal, and now it's illegal again. Who is this hurting the most, and who is it hurting in real time out there right now today?
That's a great question, Jason. You know, in Indiana, I think a very, very conservative, which I think is a very low number here in Indiana specifically, you're looking at about 45,000 square feet of indoor grows, and you're looking at just under 100 acres of outdoor grow, specifically for smokable hemp. So now these farmers are struggling and scrambling to figure out what they're going to do with this crop that's already in the ground.
So, you know, it just really makes you scratch your head that these farmers, they were told to go ahead and they planted their crops. The crops are in the ground, and this is not a grocery store where you can just go remove something from the shelves. You've got property, real estate out there that you've got these plants in, and you're sitting there wondering if you've got to go through all the effort to cultivate that and do everything that needs to be done, plus you've used that ground for something that you could have used it for something else. That's just really got to just get under the skin of some of these folks. I mean, and that's to put it lightly.
Yeah, and to be fair, I think most people who grew for smokable hemp this year understood there was a risk that this would happen. You know, that being said, there was legislation introduced last year by our allies in the state house that didn't get a hearing that, you know, really provides for a simple solution on the product, which is, you know, require it be sold in a tamper evident package. The consumer buys it from the small business in the state, takes it home and consumes it, you know, and it basically treated like an open container of alcohol in the car, where it kind of takes away the discretion or the confusion among the product, and it becomes kind of a strict liability crime of, or infraction of, you know, is this container open in the car or not, or in public? Mm-hmm. So we're hoping something like that can get some legs next year to really make sure that Indiana farmers have access to every revenue stream possible out of this plant.
All right, and now we can go on to the other problem that we are facing and have been facing over the summer, the 1% testing. So go ahead and tell us what that's about, set that up for us, and what is the problem, where does that stand right now?
So this was really related to the long-held debate on Delta 9 testing versus total THC testing and what's required under the 2018 Farm Bill. This question was answered decidedly by the USDA interim final rules that came out in October of 2019. And essentially what USDA has said, if you want your state plan approved, your testing procedures, you're going to have to test for what they refer to as total THC, which is Delta 9, and also you have to add in the THCA, which is the acid form, the precursor to Delta 9. You have to add that together and be below 0.3% total THC. This was a big frustration to the industry again, because you had states who, you know, were a little further along than Indiana in terms of developing their industry and their genetics for their region, and now you have these genetics that essentially might be useless because they've been bred to, you know, only really bred to make sure it stays under below 0.3% Delta 9. And so we really think as a group, as an association, that the easiest way to do this is do 1% total THC testing. What this allows, it allows the farmer, it reduces the risk and allows them a better chance to get their crop out of the ground, and, you know, and not having to burn their crop because it tested point, you know, 0.5 instead of 0.3. So these are some of the things that we're still working on that are coming out of USDA. We have a great infographic that we put out that, that addresses these issues. Two of the issues, which, you know, should give some confidence to people. I know this is a very frustrating process to continually voice your opinion and maybe not get everything you need, but, you know, our voices were heard on these interim final rules, and two of the things we want to change were the DEA requirements, involvement in the testing and the collection of the samples. USDA announced back in February they were relaxing those. So that is a positive sign, but really I think the home run would be for across the country would be a 1% threshold, which again would allow the development of genetics and also put our farmers in a better position to be successful.
When do you think all this should come to a head? When should we get some sort of final verdict on all this?
Oh, probably not for a very long time.
Do you think it'll be in 2020?
No, I don't.
Oh, okay.
Really, the, you know, if they're going to change the 1%, that really needs to be an act by Congress and change the definition of hemp to be very explicit.
Good luck getting that to happen quickly.
Right. So, it, you know, there are a lot of states that are choosing to go stay under the 2014 Farm Bill because there's a little more flexibility left to the states. And there's some hope that, that the 14 programs will be extended for another year or two. So there are some states that are betting on that that'll happen. Mm-hmm. Indiana so far has not been one of those. I think if you ask our regulator, we're essentially a hybrid state, which is a mix between the 14 and 18 Farm Bill. So we're slowly trying to prepare for what's required under the 18 Farm Bill, but also recognizing, I think there's a strong recognition that it, you know, that some of the interim final rules on those requirements are not perfect and can really hurt the a growing industry like the hemp industry.
Gotcha. All right, as we continue our conversation with Justin Swanson. Justin is the Midwest Hemp Council president. Justin's also the vice president of Bose Public Affairs Group of Council at Bose, McKinney, and Evans. Justin, let's now have we capped that? We need to move on to the to some Midwest Hemp Council news, but I don't want to cut you off short from any of the other topics there.
No, I think I ranted long enough. So do want to give a shout out and a plug to our Hemp at the Crossroads conference that we're looking at for early 2021. It'll be held in Indianapolis. If our members remember, we had our first one last year back in November, which was a huge success. We had a little over 300 people over 2 days from, you know, over 10 or 15 states. So we had a great mix of geography of people making connections. And with this conference, we really focus on education for the farmers and for others in the supply chain of the growing hemp industry. Mm-hmm. So really encourage our members to be on the lookout for announcements. They'll be coming soon. Jamie's been doing a great job working that out, especially with all the uncertainties of COVID. It's been pretty tough to lock some stuff down, but really excited to host again.
Boy, you sure bring back some nostalgia. Remember the days when we used to be able to get together face-to-face and shake hands and look at each other and not worry about getting each other's cooties or anything like that?
hopefully it'll be a different world come early next year, but we'll certainly be planning for some alternative functions as well.
Well, and again, hats off to the Midwest Hemp Council, Jamie Campbell Petty, and you, Justin, as well, and everybody that behind the scenes working hard to keep things rolling along here while we've been in this just strange summer here. But and of course, the return tonight of the Thirsty Thursday. This is Thursday, the day the program is coming out. Thirsty Thursday. So again, it's virtual, but that's cool. There is some communication going on.
Yeah, and I'd really encourage our members to take a look, participate tonight. We have a handful of researchers from Midwest universities discussing a great database they're putting together in terms of hemp genetics for CBD varieties, which is badly needed. And we had a great representation of Indiana growers participating in that that data collection. So I think it'd be really interesting to attend, and really is kind of the bar we're trying to set in terms of the education we're trying to provide our members and the value-add services that we have.
And of course, people can get more information by going to the MidwestHempCouncil.com website. And I tell you, I used to be the one to maintain the Midwest Hemp Council website, but now it's we've certainly gone above and beyond, and some other people have taken Rachel's taken it over, some other folks there, and they're just doing a bang up job. That's such a cool looking website, and now it's so much more informative.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Jason. And one of the main reasons we invested in the website is really to increase member interaction with each other online. Mm-hmm. We thought that was particularly important given the pandemic. But, you know, it's obviously takes some time to do it right. So it'll be a slow rollout. But eventually, if you haven't members haven't made a login and a password, I encourage you to do that and start exploring and making your profile on the members only website. We're hoping that'll be a good source of connections and networking for those looking for it.
There you go. And that's MidwestHempCouncil.com. Once again, Justin, anything else that we need to add today?
No, I really appreciate the time. And I want to give a shout out to Eric Steenstra and Michael Bowman for joining us today. And look forward to hearing what they have to say.
Fantastic. And they're coming up next. So again, Justin, we do appreciate it. Great to be back in the saddle. And we'll hear from you again here very soon.
All right. Thanks, Jason.
All right. And as we continue on, we're going to speak with Eric Steenstra. Eric is the president of Vote Hemp, which was founded back in the year 2000. So, Eric, technically, you could say that you've been involved with hemp since literally the turn of the century.
That would be correct. Kind of dating me there a little bit, Jason.
I had to come up with something to start it off with. Obviously, we have new listeners, new people tuning in all the time. So go ahead and give us a quick rundown on what Vote Hemp is all about.
Sure. Vote Hemp is a nonprofit advocacy group that was founded with the goal of changing the laws to bring back hemp as a commercial crop in the United States. And so we've been working on changing state and federal policies to, recognize hemp as a legitimate commercial crop. And we also work on, now that hemp has been legalized through the Farm Bill, we've been working with some of the federal agencies to ensure that we kind of establish a solid footing for the industry to get up and be successful. So, we're continuing to advocate on behalf of farmers and businesses and consumers interested in the hemp space.
All right. And we've got a few things we're going to discuss today, but one of the things I wanted to start with, the Coronavirus Food Assistance Program. Now, again, we've been on a hiatus here for a couple of months, so we're just getting back into it. We're getting some new information, and of course, we've not really had a chance to discuss how COVID has impacted the hemp industry. But the Coronavirus Food Assistance Program, tell us a little bit about how the feds responded to everything, how it affected hemp, and kind of give us a rundown of what's going on with that.
Sure. Yeah, so this is a program that was established under the USDA. To try to help, farmers who are struggling from the impact of the COVID virus. And so what the requirement was, the USDA put out there, was that in order to be eligible for the program, you'd have to be able to show that food-based commodity would have a drop in price between January and I think it was April of this year, of more than 5%.
Mm-hmm.
And initially, when they announced the program, they said that hemp was not eligible at all, and along with tobacco, I think was another crop that was also left ineligible. And then they heard some complaints about that, and they took a second look at it, and they said, well, it could be eligible, but we don't believe that the price has dropped more than 5%. And I want to emphasize again that this is only for certain aspects, that, for example, I think the idea here is that, it's more like food crops. And so if you're growing for CBD, I'm not sure that the Coronavirus Food Assistance Program would apply to you anyways. But for farmers who might be growing for grain, it was definitely, it's a program that I think could be eligible for. And we did do a survey of some of our supporters and did see significant drop in pricing reported by farmers. And I know other groups had looked at this as well. So, I think it's something we're continuing to dialogue with the USDA on. But it wasn't, fortunately, was not the only thing available out there for farmers and businesses in the hemp space as far as coronavirus assistance.
So the verdict, so they have not made a decision yet on whether they're going to help the farmers out, or have they made that decision not to do it, or have they been kind of going back and forth?
Yeah, they did kind of go back and forth. I think they've made a decision, I suppose, if some hard data was presented to them to sort of counter what they believe was the case, maybe it could still be changed. But you know, my understanding is that their decision is that they're, you know, hemp is not eligible.
And where did they get their 5% number from, or where did they get their figures from? And do they differ from the figures that you came up with?
Yeah, that's a great question. I believe that those numbers came from the Farm Service Agency. You know, I think that most of the hemp that's being grown in the United States these days is being grown for extracts. And so that doesn't really fall in as a, you know, sort of a food product. So unless it was being grown for grain, maybe it wouldn't, you know, it wouldn't be counted. But in terms of where they got the data, my understanding is it's from the Farm Service Agency. So I don't know. You know, all the people we've talked to have indicated that prices have dropped on the extracts, but the food market seems a little more stable. So it may be. You know, we did hear that there were some price impacts, but I don't think they were nearly as significant as they were on the extracts market.
And staying on the topic of COVID and not with the USDA, what have you heard over the summer? Is it really affecting farmers severely or not as much, or are they still just rolling along as would be expected?
Yeah, no, I think this, there's very few people that have been, you know, completely unaffected by this whole situation with the coronavirus has had impacts across the, you know, across the spectrum from what we've heard. So, I think there may be a few businesses that have been fortunate that may, you know, I think some of the online CBD sales may have benefited since a lot of the people weren't able to go into their retail stores as much. People were shifting, purchasing. And so there may have been some people that did, you know, didn't see a same kind of, effect as others did. But certainly this has had it's had a huge impact on so many different areas of our economy. So it's, you know, we're hearing a lot of people that are struggling as a result of this.
And what ways are they struggling?
Yeah, I mean, people have had to, you know, they've had slowdowns. They've had to lay off workers. They've in some cases, businesses, that may have had been on a tight financial situation, having the slowdown has pushed them over the edge into, you know, having to fold up and you know, file bankruptcy or close their business down. So we've heard some, you know, people that have really been impacted by this in a significant way.
Well, I think a lot of people that maybe the suburbanites, when they think of mom and pop farmers, they think of only mom and pop out there in the field doing the work. And that's certainly not the case. Most farms, if they're going to be productive at all, have to have workers, have to have helpers. And that's where you open the door when you have something like, you know, coronavirus out there, that is going to impact it. You're going to have people that get sick or are afraid of being sick, that sort of thing. So certainly I could see how that could cause some trouble.
Absolutely. We definitely heard about that as well. And then also in talking to regulators, you know, I was kind of interested to see what was going to happen this year. We had an overproduction of hemp last year, more acres grown and, you know, without contracts than there, you know, there was a market for it. Mm-hmm. And so we're kind of curious to see how that would impact us this year. We did hear that a lot of people still applied to get a permit to grow it through their state. But I think significantly less acres. I think a lot of people that applied maybe took a wait and see. They wanted to have an option to grow, but they didn't know for sure if they were going to grow. Mm-hmm. And that feedback I'm hearing mostly is through the genetics and, you know, the seeds and clone sellers. That their market has been down significantly this year, and I know that it was a big impact there.
Well, and you just answered my what was going to be my next question, and that is, with the coronavirus, have there been farmers that have pulled back, and will there be enough farmers pulling back if that's the case, that the that'll make it easier for the farmers that are growing and are producing to sell the product because there's fewer producers?
Yes, I think it could be sort of a necessary realignment here, because I think, as I mentioned last year, we had gone from, in 2018, we had about 3,500 licensed growers of hemp. And in 2019, it shot up to almost 18,000 licenses.
Mm-hmm.
And again, a lot of folks did grow without actually having a contract. This is not yet a commodity crop. So, finding a market can be a challenge. And it seems like a lot more people grew than what the market could sustain. And I would say it's not just a COVID situation, too. We kind of had a perfect storm because the FDA had also put out some statements that had thrown some cold water on the sales of some of the extract products. Some of the more mainstream retailers that were looking at this and were considering putting products into their shelves or had already done it, backed off after the FDA made some public statements that questioned sort of the regulatory path and for the products.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was already happening at the end of 2019, and then we had COVID hit, so it was kind of a double whammy, and it definitely impacted a lot of businesses.
And we're speaking with Eric Steenstra, president of Vote Hemp. And Eric, we just had Justin Swanson on, and we discussed the 1% testing. And that is still kind of up in the air. People still need to contact their representatives in Congress to hopefully push this forward. Go ahead and give us your take on the 1% testing rule and where you fall in with that and what can still be done to help the farmers out there.
Yeah, that's an important, super critical topic here. So it's something that we've believed in for a long time. The standard, the global standard had been this 0.3% going back almost, over 20 years with Canada and the European Union having established that. And so it was difficult to make the case with the policymakers that we needed to go higher. We did work with, Vote Hemp worked with Representative Comer to get a version of an earlier version of the Industrial Hemp Farming Act introduced that had a 0.6 for research provision in it. But ultimately, it didn't make the cut. Senator McConnell and some of the others that were looking at the legislation weren't comfortable with it, and we had to live with this 0.3 to get the bill passed. And now it's kind of coming back to us. And I think, I've been in the industry, as you mentioned, a long time. Early on, when we were just looking at fiber and grain, 0.3 did work in Canada, But the number is arbitrary. It's not a real number. There's no reason we can't go to 1%. And it's clear that farmers are getting hurt by this, that we've seen a lot of farmers who have, they have no way to guarantee that their crop is not going to be hot at the end of the season. There's impacts from climate and other conditional things that are out of their control that can push these things to go just a little bit over the limit. And so it's really clear. We've got to adjust the definition of hemp, and we've got a petition online, Vote Hemp does, on our website at votehemp.com. We would urge anybody, any of your farmers, businesses and supporters to please go and sign on to that. We are going to be sharing that with Congress and working hard to try to get a new definition for hemp at the earliest possible opportunity.
Well, Eric, on one hand, of course, we all appreciate the fact that the government has allowed us to grow hemp and that sort of thing. But, it seems like there's an adversarial situation here from the beginning. And is that the case? I mean, is there a reason that there seems to be a wall there, or is it just maybe ignorance on the political leader's side and just need to have more education? Or how do you see that?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that, there was some concerns. Some of the legislators were concerned, well, we don't want, for example, they would say, we don't want anybody growing marijuana. And that was part of the thing that drove the 0.3 was the, and honestly, I don't think it was a, well-founded fear, because, 1% THC is far, far, far below what levels of THC that are in marijuana that's out there in states where it's regulated, right?
Mm-hmm.
Typically,
what would that percentage be? Do you have an idea of a typical marijuana? What the percentage
is? Yeah, on the low end, it's about 15%, and often those products go up to as high as 30% in the in the flower, right?
Wow.
And so, and the other thing that's significant about it is the CBD, right? So in hemp varieties, CBD is the dominant cannabinoid, right? So it's going to have a higher ratio, more CBD in it than it would THC. And CBD also works to counter sort of the effects of THC. So at 1% or less, we're not really talking about something that has a value as something to get high or something like that. So it makes good sense, and it's going to help protect farmers and allow the industry to have a little more flexibility in figuring this out, So I think it's definitely necessary, and I think we can get it done. I think we can convince policymakers that this is the right thing to do, and that this is not, we're not legalizing marijuana here. If we go to 1%, it's not going to hurt anybody. So I think that, we've just got to do some more education about it, and it's a next step. It's unfortunate that we couldn't get it first time around.
Well, and let me ask you one final question to cap that. When they're looking at 0.03 and you're looking at 1%, what and marijuana would be maybe at 15%, what is, of course, you're assuming 1% is going to be a very safe level. How high could you potentially go, do you think, that would still be a safe level from THC?
Well, safety is maybe not even the question on some of these policymakers' minds. I think the idea is that they don't want, a product that is going to be used to sort of, quote unquote, get high, right?
Mm-hmm,
so,
mm-hmm.
If you're talking about that, I mean, honestly, some of these products, or cannabis that has, low THC, even maybe up to 2 or 3%, would still be, it's possible there could be some effect, but it would be more limited. And again, I think that, 1% seems like a reasonable point where we can, the industry can work with it, and we can come up with varieties that will have some room, so that if it goes a little higher than you expect it to, and your variety is at 0.5, you're not going to end up going over the limit and having somebody come in and say, you've got to destroy your crop. That's what we don't want. We don't want farmers to get hurt here.
Mm-hmm. Right. Once again, Eric Steenstra, president of Vote Hemp, and you can find Vote Hemp at votehemp.com. Eric, anything else that we needed to hit on here today?
No, we covered a lot. I really appreciate the opportunity. Thanks for everything that you're doing. Enjoy coming on the podcast, and just would say to all your listeners, please do go to votehemp.com and sign that petition. And we really need your help to get the change to 1% on the definition.
Well, Eric, always some great information. That's why we keep bringing you back on here to give that information out. So again, very much appreciated, and we will be talking to you soon.
Thanks again, Jason.
As we continue on, we're going to continue our conversation with Michael Bowman. Michael is the Chief Policy Officer for First Crop Incorporated, also the Board Chair of the U.S. Hemp Growers Association. Michael, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing great today, Jason. How are you? Great to be here.
Doing fantastic. We always appreciate having you on the program, Michael. Always a plethora of information and knowledge and just hemp in general. So it's always great to get you on and get things rolling again here with the Midwest Hemp Council podcast. But I tell you what, now one of the new things there that we just mentioned was the board chair of the U.S. Hemp Growers Association. That's a new thing. Talk about that. Talk about the association and what it means to be the board chair.
Oh, happy to do that, Jason. After about a year of planning and putting this together, what we've created is an organization that is focused on farmers. Our board of 15 is majority farmers. It looks and acts much like any other crop organization, in the U.S. Knowing that our goal here is to bring hemp forward into what we call the third crop in the United States, and so we want to be able to start acting and looking and operating like any other agricultural crop in the U.S. So the most exciting thing about this is we are an exclusive partnership with Farm Journal Media, and over the past year we were able to talk about all these opportunities in the hemp space and the importance of really outreach through the media and educational opportunities. And the data that Farm Journal had collected to date shows that agriculture in general is very open to the idea of these opportunities for hemp. And we felt like there was a real void, in the industry that was for the organization that was farmer focused. And so being an old farm boy myself and several of those around me, we decided that this was something we needed to do to take this industry domestically here to the next level. So we launched, we did all the paperwork and finished that up in end of January, and had a soft launch really for a kickoff the end of February, just before COVID hit. Mm. And so we like everybody else now, COVID has slowed things down. And then with the challenges in the industry right now, we've got a lot of things planned for 2021. We'll be part of Farm Journal Field Days, a virtual farm show next week. Really excited about everything that's going on right now, but we're all dealing with the challenges that this new world is put before us.
Well, and of course, any board requires more than one person; otherwise, it'd be a dictatorship. But so, how many people are on this board? I know Jamie Campbell Petty's on the board, but what kind of folks create this board?
Sure, we're a 15 member board, and by our bylaws require that 8 of those at any time have to be farmers, actually growing hemp and working on that. So we have that's what we have, and then we have affiliated members as well that are in the industry, but not farming the crop themselves, or the processing side, or finance, those kind of things that help support the industry.
Okay, well, fantastic. Well, that's something that's neat and new, so we wanted to point that out. One other thing real quick we'll touch on here for folks that may not be familiar with you, Michael, or the program. Maybe they're just, this is the first time tuning in. Tell us what First Crop is all about, and that's you're the chief policy officer for First Crop. Tell us what that's all about.
I am, Jason. I and four of my longtime friends who have been in agriculture formed First Crop about a year and a half ago. We're a public benefit corporation, really centered around hemp. We do have CBD products, and then we'll have other products as well. Our plan for 2020 originally was to have some food products and textiles, but we pushed that off to 2021. But we are a public benefit corporation. I wanted this to look and act a lot like the old time co-ops. My great grandfather was founded one of the original co-ops in our area in Colorado. And the idea of we all do better when we work together, and finding a way for the farmers to have some participation in the upstream and the value added end of the product cycle. We settled on a public benefit corporation for a couple of reasons. They're just a little easier to manage than a traditional co-op. They give us the same end result. And I call it a 21st century cooperative model. But it works really well. We worked with 11 farmers last year. They all came back and wanted to work with us again this year. We work with them and SOPs and help them. We make the genetics decision and the growing decisions and harvesting decisions and work together in a true partnership. We have a foundation. I'm sorry for the background noise. I'm in the Louisville Airport.
I was going to say, did they make you do dishes there to pay for your lunch? Yeah. Or
I'm in the airport for the first time in 6 months, so sorry. I do not know what that noise is. Oh, they're working on an elevator.
As long as it's not gunshots, I think you're probably okay.
Not gunshots. So, we're very excited. We had our first, our first crop last year, and that's now being turned into a product this year. Today, we just launched a hemp mask that we're very excited about. In this COVID world, right. So it's got a 100% hemp fiber outer shell and some cotton inner lining, very comfortable. And so we're trying to do everything we can to help support the hemp industry and the hemp plant.
And where can people get one of those masks?
You can go to firstcrop.com. And today was the launch date, so today was it.
Well, no offense, Michael, but let's hope that is very short lived.
I would agree with you. We all hope this isn't our new normal. But for the time being, we'll try to make proverbial lemonade.
Right, and of course there are a lot of people that are having fun with it and collecting all kinds of different masks and that sort of thing for nostalgia purposes for the future. So I would certainly say a hemp mask is something that should be on everybody's shopping list, especially for the nostalgic value of it.
I would agree.
There we go. Got to pump a couple sales there for you, Michael.
Yeah.
Now, we just had Eric Steenstra on the program, and he was talking about the coronavirus food assistance program. Are you involved with that, or can you speak on that?
we are very involved with that, Jason. In fact, we had our weekly board meetings on Thursday. We've been very involved with the USDA and providing them information. What we hope was going to give us a different outcome now than what the original decision was by USDA to not include hemp.
Mm-hmm.
We believe we have all the data that shows that we should be included. I mean, for heaven's sakes, we have aloe leaves involved that are eligible now, and they weren't able to demonstrate any price decline. So,
mm-hmm.
We think if aloe leaves can be involved, the important work and all that we've done in the hemp industry to bring it to date should also be included.
Now, you know, to the rest of us, the USDA, FDA, any of those organizations are faceless organizations. It's just I wouldn't know if there's 10 people involved or 1,000 people, how many desks the paperwork goes across, who's in charge, that sort of thing. But it seems like the USDA is not really, you know, they're still not on board with the whole hemp thing. Where did they get their information on the coronavirus food assistance program, and how is it different than yours?
Well, they used a spot pricing report from Pam. Sorry.
It's quite all right. We can still hear you well, Michael.
Okay, very good. Well, they used a spot pricing report out of Pan X, which only just was a spot price. It was a snapshot in time that only showed a very insignificant drop, which is not reflective of the market as we know.
Mm-hmm.
There was substantial data through PanX that was able to demonstrate the data that gave us the data we needed really to demonstrate our eligibility. So we've gone back with that, and we've issued our press release. We're continuing to work with offices across Capitol Hill. Congressman Peterson's been a great help on the House Ag side. Mitch McConnell's office has been great, as always, to work with on this. So,
mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, this really is something that the Secretary of Agriculture, could make that decision on his own if he wanted to. He could amend the Federal Register, or direct it to be amended. But I think we're going to prevail here, Jason. I think we put a lot of work in this, and we think we're worthy of that designation. And so, I think we'll get there.
Is there anything that the listeners can do to help that along?
Well, I would say that if you have a relationship with a congressional office, that going there, calling your congressman, calling your senator, is always good. A phone call to someone you know in the office is always better than just a fax or an email.
Mm-hmm.
So anybody who could pick up the phone and call, that would be very helpful. Just ask them to include hemp and CFAP.
Okay. Michael, anything else that we needed to touch on today?
Well, I've been in Kentucky the last 3 days and touring the area here. We've got some of our members of USHDA are here. Some members, some people that I've known, over the last 10 years or so and doing my advocacy. And, we're in such a challenging time right now. And you see the opportunities. You clearly see the opportunities we have here when you're in a beautiful state here like Kentucky and the crops that are here today. And
mm-hmm.
you see the optimism. It really gives, it should give all of us the lift that we need to keep fighting, keep working on this policy. Let's get things harmonized. Let's get these markets opened up. Let's get access to USDA programs. All the things that we need to look like another crop. Because as I go out, particularly in the case over the last couple of days where I've had the chance to see young farmers the eyes just light up when they show you the crop and they look and they see a future in this crop. So, I think it's just incumbent upon us as an industry to, really get our act together. Let's get our voices unified. Let's talk about, all of the other products that we know are important that we can bring to the table, the feed and the textiles and the bioproducts and the building materials. All of these are going to be really important new opportunities for us in these coming years. And so, let's keep our vision broad and look at the entirety of this plant and build a foundation around that.
Fantastic. Michael Bowman, Chief Policy Officer for First Crop Incorporated, also one of the board chairs of the U.S. Hemp Growers Association. Michael, some great information there. We do appreciate it. And obviously, you're a regular on the program. We expect to have you back again. And each time we get you on here, we love to hear the advances and what's going on.
Well, Jason, I always appreciate the time to spend with you and to talk about my favorite crop, so you can call anytime.
Absolutely. Fantastic. Hey, and good luck there catching the flight. You might lend those guys a hand there doing some, I don't know what they're doing there on your elevator or what have you.
Hey, I think I can help them.
You think you can help them? Well, if you got some time, why not? You know,
I got a little time.
One of the many hats of Michael Bowman, right?
Yeah. Old farm boy, you know, always looking when you hear equipment running, you look around and say, I can do that.
Of course. There we go. All right. Hey, Michael, thanks so much, and we will talk to you soon.
All right, Jason. Great talking to you.
All right. All right, and that's going to do it for our show this week, our first show back from our brief hiatus. Hope it's been enjoyable for you, and I hope you will continue to listen to the Midwest Hemp Council Weekly Podcast. It is brought to you today by the Bose Public Affairs Group at Bose, McKinney, and Evans. And if you'd like more information about the Midwest Hemp Council, go to the website, MidwestHempCouncil.com, and there you can get more information about how to get involved, how to volunteer, become a member, all kinds of great stuff here as we kick into the fall season. So thanks again for tuning in, and remember to tell a friend about the Midwest Hemp Council Weekly Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Dozier. We'll see you next time. So long, everybody.